Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. Today's program will be another in my Framing Our Democracy series. My guest is the Reverend Barbara Blum. Blum is a United Church of Christ minister currently serving an Evangelical Lutheran church in Spencer, New York. She attended the Colgate Rochester Cozier Divinity School in Rochester and is currently working on her doctorate of theology at Lutheran Theological School in Philadelphia. She describes herself as mostly progressive, occasionally traditional, always inclusive, and sometimes outspoken. Today we'll be discussing faith, politics, and social justice with the Reverend Blum, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I want you to tell us about your faith. Was it a long and winding road that brought you into the ministry, or was it something you discovered suddenly? Tell us.
It was a long and winding road. I actually grew up Presbyterian, and then I left the church in my teens as soon as I could, as most of us did, and never really went back to church. And then in the early 90s, my brother was killed by a car, my dad was committed suicide, and my Wow. best friend and her two little boys were killed in a car accident. And I just needed to go to church. So I ended up in the Unitarian Universalist Church in Ithaca, and it was a great experience. At first, I would go and sit in the back after the church service began, and then I'd stay, and then I'd leave as soon as the church service was over and just kind of snuck in and snuck out. But eventually I got more involved and worked in the religious education department and then thought I would like to maybe go to seminary.
Hmm.
So I was researching seminaries, found this one in Rochester that sounded interesting, went to visit, and 2 weeks later I was enrolled. And then 3 weeks later, on a beautiful September day, I was driving to Rochester, my first day of classes, thinking to myself the whole time, I can turn around. Nobody knows I'm doing this, so I can turn around. But I ended up in seminary, and I sat down at my desk, opened a Bible for the first time in 15 years at 8:30 in the morning on September 11th, 2001.
Wow.
And 15 minutes later, the towers fell. And it was an incredible moment. I thought, well, I'm either really supposed to be here or I'm really not supposed to be here.
Wow, what a moment that is.
It was pretty incredible.
So obviously you were supposed to be there, and did this reinforce your path?
It did. It took a little while. I was a Unitarian. I had, like many of us, had some preconceived notion of Christianity and God and Jesus and was very wary. I kind of would sit there kind of quietly holding on to my desk chair saying, don't anybody try to evangelize me. But after a while, and I started listening and reading, and I realized what a radical message of social justice that Jesus actually had. And often that gets lost in the current media view of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a little while. I was still a Unitarian when I graduated, but I slowly became more and more interested in Scripture, in the way that I think that Jesus has shown us, that I think leads to a better world and a better life. And so I became a Unitarian or a United Church of Christ minister.
That's remarkable to me. You know, I don't meet evangelicals who call themselves progressives, for one thing. Has this been a hard road for you in regard to the evangelical traditions and so on?
Well,
I mean, did you have a hard time finding a church?
No, because surprisingly, a lot of mainline Christian churches are moving toward a more progressive theology.
Mm-hmm.
But our voices often get drowned out by the louder voices of the people who claim Christianity in a more judgmental way than we do.
Yeah, I think that is the notion that people have about evangelicals.
Yeah.
Judgmental, not very forgiving in some ways, and also not very inclusive.
Not very inclusive, and a lot of rules and beliefs that you have to follow.
Mm-hmm.
But the United Church of Christ, in which I'm ordained, we are non-creedal. So we often call ourselves Unitarians considering Christ. And the Evangelical Lutherans are actually quite progressive.
That is really good for people to hear.
I really think it is. Yeah, I was surprised. And in fact, the dean of my synod conference in the Evangelical Lutheran Church is an openly married gay man. And I was quite surprised at how I hadn't actually realized the Lutherans were that progressive either.
Oh, and, so. And this is good for people to hear and good for us to know in this culture right now, because obviously we want to get into some of these issues. You come from a family of immigrants. Your family was from the Netherlands. And I know you're concerned about the demonization of immigrants that's happening in this culture and in politics right now. To talk to us about your feelings about that.
That is at the moment one of my focuses for my doctorate degree. I'm working with a group from Ithaca, actually, to develop a workshop that can go out particularly to rural churches where there may not be a lot of interaction with people from different faith traditions. And we're putting together a workshop that first people look at their own theology, because a lot of people in church have actually never really given a lot of thought to who Jesus is to them or who God is. And there's quite a lot of difference. Mm-hmm. People have a lot of different ideas. There are some who think that Jesus is their Lord and Savior, while there are others who think that Jesus is more of somebody who shows us the path.
Mm-hmm. Like a teacher.
Like a teacher. Mm-hmm. Maybe even more than a teacher, but it's the path that's important. It's not mm-hmm. it's not Jesus, it's the path, the mm-hmm. way that he, the way. Mm-hmm. So first, the first couple of sessions are looking at that, and then the second session is a PowerPoint that the Muslim group has helped me put together that talks about Islam and how similar the traditions really are. So we're working on that because, as we all know right now, that's a big issue in this country.
Yeah, and you talk about the fact that you take Jesus' teaching seriously, right? That he ate and drank and commiserated with the poor and the sick and people who are from strange lands.
He ate and he drank and he...
Well, but why, Barb, do you think people have lost some of this along the way?
I think that there's a lot of cherry picking. I think that the Bible was written 2,000 plus years ago, some of the stories. Well, actually, not written. The stories were oral stories that were later written down. And even when they were written without chapters, without verses, without punctuation, without capitalization. They were long stories. And later in the 1500s, they were put into chapters and verses. So I think we've made the gospel stories very small and limited the impact of the whole story. And the whole story is much larger.
Yeah, and so you identify as a person of faith with his teachings, and how do you translate that into your real life? You know,
well, isn't that
besides Sunday at church. Yeah.
That is, of course, always a tricky part. But I think, I don't know. I think I try to listen to others. I have been a foster parent, and I try to listen to people's stories, and I try to engage with people who are different from me and hear their stories. And the more I hear their stories, the more I learn that really, we're not really all that different. And I think that every time I have an experience like that, it is a reminder to me that we're all people. Using Christian terminology, we're all children of God. And God created the whole world, including Muslims and Indians and gays and lesbians and poor people and kids who wear mohawks and... God created all of us, and I try to always keep that front and foremost in my mind, even when I'm disagreeing with somebody.
Yeah. Don't you think, regardless of religion and faith, that a lot of that is fear?
Oh, yes.
Of the other, right? It has nothing to do with religion or you know, what the Bible said you're supposed to behave like. It really is just based on human fallible fear, right?
Yeah. Fear of the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jesus was killed because of fear, because they were afraid of his power, the words he was saying, because it was turning the social structure upside down. So he was killed because he was turning the social structure upside down. He was threatening those who have power and wealth and lifting up those who don't. And they were afraid.
That sounds like right now, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It does resonate.
Yes, it does.
Talk to us a little bit about the example of the Good Samaritan. You use that in some of your sermons.
Well, I use the Good Samaritan a lot because the Samaritans were a despised people. They were a different faith tradition, and they were a despised people. And yet Jesus uses as one of his most best-known stories is the Good Samaritan, in which it is the Samaritan who is the one who stops to help the person who is laying in the road. The others all walk right by, and it is Samaritan who takes him to a little inn and leaves money so this person can be taken care of, and then says, I'll be back in 3 days. And there are many other examples of where Jesus lifts up the other in the story. Again, there's a story about 10 lepers, and Jesus heals them, and 9 of them leave, and 1 turns around to thank Jesus. And the only one who turns around to thank Jesus is the Samaritan, and the others all leave. And there is the story of the woman at the well, who is from a different faith tradition, who's by herself, who is breaking all the norms, and Jesus has his longest conversation with her, and then he goes to her home with her and spends 3 days, much to the chagrin of his disciples, who are horrified that he's doing something like that. And there are many other examples, but those are some of the best known.
And that sounds like it totally resonates once again with today's, you shouldn't be doing this, you can't, you know, that person is not right, not part of our world. So how do you navigate that demonization, though, that we're seeing in this culture as a person of faith? I mean, people are being, women are being demonized, LGBT people are being demonized. You must talk about that. With your flock.
Well, I talk about it with my congregation. I am quite lucky in that I have a fairly progressive. They're older, but they're quite progressive, and they are quite open to that. The bigger conversations happen often. Well, sometimes I write letters to the editor, and I get quite a few responses from people who disagree with me, and also people I just meet, and I try not to argue, but more to ask questions. And often we can find common ground. And sometimes I learn something. Hopefully sometimes they learn something.
Yeah.
But we don't argue. And I think that's arguing isn't changing anybody's mind or transforming the way we think or live.
Yeah. So. Do people come up to you in the course of your life, outside of the church, obviously, and ask for your help? Are you able to give people help? Does it always revert back to faith?
I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure.
Well, I'm just wondering if you give people spiritual help in the grocery store, you know, things like that. And do you always think faith is the thing that will help them?
I think a faith in something that's bigger than our lives helps. I'm not going to preach you need to believe in God or you need to believe in Jesus.
Yeah.
But I do ask people, who is God to you? And if they say to me, well, God is this white guy in the sky with a beard, I like to say, well, and I don't believe in that. And I just say, well, I don't either. To me, God is the whole big shebang. And it's just a word that we have used in the Christian tradition to explain the unexplainable.
Yeah. So you think of it as a universal word instead of just a concrete person or story.
Yeah.
No, that I find that really interesting because some people are really stuck in, the concrete meaning of this and this and this and.
Yeah, so. And people who say they reject Christianity are stuck in that view of God, but that I think God is the force, the whatever it is that keeps us. I was talking to a scientist yesterday, actually, and we were talking about a little bit about faith and science. And then he said, well, you know, the Big Bang had to come from somewhere, didn't it? He said, and that's the abyss that we always reach, that somewhere there had to have been, and something that it's not a thing, it's not, but there was something out there that we will not even be able to figure out with science.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Barbara Blum. This is one of my Framing Our Democracy series, and we're talking about faith and social justice and inclusion and politics and so on. And how do you see your faith community playing a role in this culture that is becoming so mean-spirited and, you know, we're up against less inclusion than ever right now? How do you see yourself playing a role?
Well, I think we need to speak up a little bit more and to be have our voices heard, because I'm not, certainly not by any means, the only pastor or Christian who thinks like this. In fact, most of my colleagues do. But I think often we're busy running churches and dealing with the administrative aspect and not engaging enough outside the church and saying, look, this is, and it's not just church religious history, but it's secular history as well. When we don't treat people well, we fail. We fall apart. Our nations crash. We have to take care of the least among us. We have to feed the poor. We have to heal the sick. And we have to treat each other as we'd like to be treated.
Yeah.
And this is the basic theology of all religions.
Yeah. So you feel like you're responsible for trying to change this culture, too. I mean, besides just feeding the sick, let's change the culture.
Change the way we think.
You know, we need health care, and you know, people need food, and they need jobs. And it's not just feeding somebody without helping to lift them up, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, especially now in today's world, yes, we have to lift them up. Feeding them, making sandwiches for a day as a community is nice, but it doesn't actually solve the problem.
Yeah.
And we have to find ways to actually move beyond just putting Band-Aids on these systems, but actually changing the way the systems work so that people have an opportunity to have a decent life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think also in doing so, we become more aware of our planet, and we might take better care of our planet. Once we start thinking outside of ourselves, then I think it'll keep moving forward in many ways.
Yeah, I think there's a real opportunity in this culture right now with the chaos and the mean-spiritedness for the good side to lift up.
Yeah.
Because, it seems like the good people and the good in all of us has been put into the background because things were just moseying right along. Now it's become radically important
for us to stand up
because we're there. We are there, all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Do you encourage your congregation to get involved in social justice issues and politics? Do you go there?
I do a little bit. I think, as I said, they're a little bit, as many of our churches, we're an aging congregation. We haven't found ways to really reach younger people.
Why do you think that is?
I think that we are, well, if I had the answer, I would have a much larger church. But I think that we are, as a whole, we're kind of still stuck in a 1960s, 1970s ways of doing church. And there's a lot of conversation among religious groups, church groups in my seminary about how we reach young people.
Yeah.
In real ways.
Yeah.
Because they're looking for something authentic. But we're not going to reach them by just changing the music or tweeting. And
How about Facebook? A march of the evangelical lefties? Now, that might attract.
But we also have to change how people view Christianity, that God is not the white guy in the sky.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And when I say God to a lot of people, that's, they think that's who I'm talking about, some person who's going to do me all kinds of favors if I do things right. And that's not the way it goes.
Yeah. Well, what do you think of the people who think of God as she?
That's cool.
You're fine with whatever iteration believe?
In fact, the wisdom literature in the Bible is all feminine imagery. We often ignore that in church, but all the wisdom literature is all feminine.
Wow.
And that precedes Jesus.
See, people need to know this. Yeah. This would bring in more young people. It would bring in more progressive people.
We're going to do a women's church at my church sometime. We're going to do everything with women images for a couple of weeks and see how that...
Oh, any new idea would probably be better because I think a lot of people do think that a lot of religion is stuck in the 60s or the past, you know, and that it doesn't relate to what's going on in the world right now, regardless of whether you change the music.
Yeah. That's what a lot of us do. We'll just play some praise music and, put some hip-hop in there.
Actually, Adele's music could be very religious to a lot
of
people.
A lot of music does, if we choose the right music, it can speak to people in a way that is very spiritual. Oh, my gosh, very spiritual. I think I got most of my spirituality from 70s and 80s folk music.
Yeah. I got a lot of my poetry and my thoughts about the culture from them too. Now, you had a commentary called A Simple Way, and you talk about how money and status drive our culture, and when you've done funerals, nobody ever talks about how big somebody's house was, or how much money they made. Talk to us about that simple idea of judging people as human beings instead of consumers.
Yeah. I do a lot of, I've done a lot, I worked also worked for hospice for a little while and was asked to do celebrations of life and funerals. We don't actually call them funerals all that often anymore.
What do you call them?
Celebration of life.
Okay.
We try to celebrate the person who.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody, when I'm hearing people's stories and they talk about the person, they don't say, oh, my gosh, he had such a great car. It was, you know, a convertible Mustang that he never shared with anybody.
Uh-huh.
Or he had a great big house on the lake, and it was beautiful. They talk about the person. And the biggest funerals and the ones that most people attend are the ones who have the most stories about how much love they shared and how much they gave of themselves and of what they had to others. By far, there's no comparison. And at the end of the day, you know, we talk in Christianity, we talk about eternal love. And to me, that's eternal love because mm-hmm. it's the people we touch, whose lives we touch, who then in turn touch other people's lives. And that to me is this eternal love that can kind of grow exponentially if we allow it to.
Yeah. And then you have to create a safe place where people can do that, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the little foundations of people being able to behave well. you need a foundation of safety. And that goes back to what you were talking about earlier. We've got to feed the poor, and we've got to, you know, heal the sick, and we've got to help people in real life terms.
In real life terms.
To achieve those goals so that they can feel safe.
Yeah,
to share.
And there's
the
a lot of places, especially particularly children. I have a lot of kids in my life that aren't my own that are end up staying in my house for a while, or I go out and help. But they need safe places, and that always touches me very much when I.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take much for some of these kids.
Yeah, and that's what people are looking for. And I mean, that could be an angle for trying to bring new people into the church, you know, a safe place to be who you are and not be judged and not have to have a huge religious
experience.
Yeah.
Or something you have to do every Sunday.
Yeah. That makes sense to me because the people I meet are looking for safety.
Yeah.
And they're looking for
interesting thought too.
You know, they're for communion with other human beings. You know, not necessarily in a religious sense.
Yeah.
Because I think the internet has kept people away from the human community
connecting
in more ways than we ever thought of.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Now, you know that there's always a debate in this country about the separation of church and state. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, to tell us what you think. Should religious schools be getting government funding and, you know, the politics of it?
I certainly don't think that people should bring in their faith on a personal level into government. For instance, to say that all abortion shouldn't happen because that child is, according to their faith tradition, should be born. That's their faith tradition. And other people may have other faith traditions. In this country, we do have an individual right to our own faith decisions. Same with LGBTQ marriages. I was actually I went to see Governor Cuomo yesterday speaking about the water quality in the lake, Finger Lakes. And I was sitting next to somebody who is from the other side of the political scale. And he was talking about LGBTQ marriages and how he thought they were horrible. And I just said, well, does it affect you? you know, this is such a simple thing. It doesn't. And from a Christian position, in 2,000 years ago in Rome, homosexuality was common. It was common.
Yeah.
And Jesus never talks about homosexuality. Never. So I don't think that people can bring their belief or their rules around religion into politics. But I think the basic idea that everybody should be honored and should have equal opportunity, that the way that Jesus, the path that he's trying to show us, I think that should be grounded. I think every politician should be grounded in that.
Yeah, so you don't think the church-state thing should be something that discriminates? You know, I mean, on the basis of...
Yeah, as far as Catholic schools, I hadn't actually given that much thought, to be honest.
I understand that. I mean, it's a big question.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. And it's been debated since the beginning of this country, and it will be, you know, forevermore, I think. Do you meet people who think you have a special port into knowing Jesus, and would you share it with them? And
till they talk to me.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? A lot of people think they can never reach a certain point in their relationship, and somebody who's gone to seminary and, you know what I mean?
I think when
different levels of faith.
Yeah. In the traditions that I belong to, the Unitarian Universalists, the UCC, and the ELCA, We don't tend to elevate clergy too much.
Mm.
There are some denominations that elevate clergy a little bit more. Lutherans maybe, I mean, they call me pastor, which I'm not used to, because we don't do that in UCC or the
yeah.
UU tradition very much, sometimes. But, and I'm sure that there are people who think that when they meet me and if I tell them that I'm a minister, but I don't dress like a minister and I don't act much like one, so I think that that kind of...
And then you've got the people going, why don't you dress like a minister? What are you wearing, shorts?
Yeah. But, you know, I think we all have that opportunity to reach that more sacred holy ground
mm-hmm.
if we're open to it. And
yeah.
But I think we need to find places. And since I do this intentionally, I find those places because it's my job, it's my work, it's my passion.
Yeah.
And not everybody takes that time to do that. So,
Barbara, we're almost out of time. I want you to talk a little bit about hope, because in some of your talks, you've talked about how you can find hope in the smallest little places and the tiniest little notions. Talk to us a little bit about hope before we end.
Hope is the key to all of it. And when you look around, and we just went through Easter, and sometimes the world can seem like we are stuck in Black Friday, which is the day that Jesus was crucified in the Christian tradition, and then Easter is the day that, you know, it's hope. And we can feel like we're stuck there with all the news reports and everything. But if you look around, there are so many people doing kind things for one another. There are so many people who do care about the planet, about each other, about others. There are so many people who are seeking. And there are many more of those people than there are of the ones who are trying to keep us down. And I think that's where we find hope. And I have a little story. Do I have time to tell my little
sure.
story? This is a little story that I think I wrote about once. That there was this old gentleman who had been living on the land for forever, and he just had a simple, wonderful life. He would get his own water and grow his own crops and harvest them and store them and keep them through the winter and enjoy them. And as he aged, his kids thought he needed to move to the city. They thought it was too dangerous for him. So they moved him into the city. And the noise and the sirens going off and the people, it was just too much for him. And he was having a really hard time, and he was getting depressed. And he went for a walk along the sidewalk, and all of a sudden he saw this little purple flower in the cracks in the sidewalk. And he stopped, and he looked down, and his son was with him, and he picked up that little flower. And his son said, "Dad, how did you find that flower?" And the old man said, "Well, it's all in what you're looking for."
Yeah.
And I think of that often. When I get into dark times, I think, I just got to go find that place or that thing or that person that gives me that ray of hope again.
Yeah, that's a great story. I love
it.
That's great. Well, Barb Blum, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great pleasure. Thank you for sharing your story and your wisdom with us. Again, this has been Barbara Blum. She is a reverend, and this has been one of my Framing Our Democracy shows. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. This was fun.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.